Welcome to the Issue Is podcast. I'm Alex Michelson. Thank you so much for listening. This week, a great panel. Gloria Allred, one of our most frequent guests, legendary attorney Antonio Villaraigosa, the former mayor of Los Angeles, former speaker of the Assembly of California, and our first-timer, Michael Knowles of the Daily Wire. He works for Ben Shapiro. We're going to hear from them in a second, but we began with a one-on-one interview with Gloria Allred because I wanted to talk to her about really the big, disturbing, crazy, weird, unbelievable story of the week, Jeffrey Epstein. She represents several victims of Epstein. Here's what she had to say about that.
Welcome back to The Issue Is.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
So one of the big stories this week is Jeffrey Epstein.
Yes.
Of course, you have several of your clients are some of his accusers.
And victims, yes.
What do you think happened to him?
I don't know, but I'd like to know. And I understand that now the autopsy has come in, that it is being ruled a suicide. I do think it would be important to have an independent medical examiner examine him, and so the public can know that there is confirmation of the initial report that it was a suicide, because a lot of people have a lot of theories and a lot of concerns, and I think we deserve the answers rather than the conspiratorial theories of President Trump, which there's no basis for and there's no merit for what he said, no evidence of it.
Do you believe those theories?
I don't believe anything unless I see evidence and evidence that I believe is reliable evidence. And again, the president has offered no evidence whatsoever, not one iota of evidence for his ridiculous conspiracy theories, which are only inflicting more harm on the victims because they are suffering, continuing to suffer, not only because of what Mr. Epstein did to them, but now because of the suicide.
I'm sure you've talked to some of your clients who are his victims.
I do, almost every day.
What do they say about this suicide?
Well, I mean, it's just so disturbing and shocking, and they had so many questions. How could this have happened? Even the attorney general had to admit that the system failed, and that's obvious. It was obvious before he admitted it. And so how could this happen? How could these victims be denied their day in court to confront Jeffrey Epstein in the pending criminal case against him, now pending in New York, in federal court, because he's left unattended apparently for hours in violation of their rules and regulations. And, you know, there needs to be a full investigation of that. I know there is an ongoing investigation by the Inspector General.
Yeah, at least two different ongoing investigations.
Exactly.
One from the
and
FBI
the Justice
as well.
Department,
so
too.
Where do you go from here? As an attorney who represents some of them, are there going to be more lawsuits? What are you looking for?
Absolutely. We're going to be filing our lawsuit soon. And we want to get justice for them, and we want to get truth for them, and we want accountability for them. So we will be filing against the estate of Jeffrey Epstein and potentially against others who may have been involved in conspiring to sexually exploit these vulnerable child victims. And that's what they were. They're adults now, but they're still suffering from the harm of what they experienced.
And I'm sure you've done some investigation into this. What do you assess the state at, in terms of its value? We've heard some people say $500 million. What do you think it is?
Well, we don't know yet because we haven't done discovery. And plus he has assets in many, many different places, including Florida, including the Virgin Islands and New York, New Mexico, and perhaps other places as well. So, but we're all about the victims. And we are going to make sure that we vigorously litigate this case, investigate this case. There may be others who will be potential defendants. We'll have to see. Even the federal United States Attorney's Office, when it filed the sex trafficking of minors charge against Mr. Epstein, alleged that there was a conspiracy or that was a conspirator or unnamed. So we'll have to see who else might be have been in the chain, who else knowingly conspired, because he couldn't have done this himself. He couldn't have just gotten these girls in front, you know, to his home, to his massage room, to other locations, and to be able to sexually exploit these children without the assistance of others. They need to be held accountable as well.
You know, Jeffrey Epstein hung with some of the most powerful men on the planet. in the last couple of years, we've seen many of the most powerful men on the planet go down and you be the attorney against them. Talking about Harvey Weinstein,
yes.
R. Kelly, an
yes.
example of
I'm
this.
Still involved in representing victims of both of those and Bill Cosby.
Bill Cosby,
yes.
And now, of course, Jeffrey Epstein. Do you think that our society has actually changed, or do you think this sort of behavior is still underway?
Well, it is still underway. I can tell you that for sure, because we do a lot of confidential settlements against, you know, rich, powerful, famous men. What we're doing is seeking to equalize the power. These men, many of them the predators, they've had the power. And the victims, nobody's heard of. They don't have resources. They haven't had attorneys. They haven't had the power. Now we're working to equalize the power. And so that's one of the ways that we are making these predators accountable. This is the reckoning, Alex. This is the age of the empowerment of women. This is the time when women refuse to be silent anymore and refuse to live in fear of what might happen if they assert their legal rights. And now the fear is on the part of the sexual predators that one day they might wake up and I'm there. Other attorneys are there to hold them accountable.
Are you worried that there might be a little blowback from that? Because we saw after Barack Obama was president, some people thought we're going into a post-racial period. And we've seen actually probably more racism in the last few years after that. Are you concerned that if women get more power, there might be people that push back and try to go the other way?
Well, that always happens. It's always two steps forward and one step back. But that's okay, because we know that if there's pushback, if there's blowback, as you say, it must be because we're doing something important. It must be because we are fighting and winning change. And they're reacting against that change. They fear that change because they fear that they won't have the entitlements and they won't be able to have the power they had before. We're not taking away power, but we're equalizing the power. And women have a right to that. Everyone's daughter has a right to be treated with respect and dignity and have equal protection under the law.
Well, one powerful man that doesn't seem to be on the same page with you is Iowa Congressman Steve King. he made some comments this week that got some attention. You've been very open on this show about your past as a rape victim.
Yes.
And he made some comments in terms of rape and incest. Let's play that. We can talk about it.
What if it was okay, and what if we went back through all the family trees and just pulled those people out that were products of rape and incest? Would there be any population of the world left if we did that, considering all the wars and all the rape and pillage that's taken place and whatever happened in culture after society? I know I can't certify that they're not part of a product of that.
So his comments, basically, there would be no people if there wasn't for rape and incest, which is why he wants to be pro-life and then not have it be a crime, essentially, to abort a child of rape and incest. Your reaction to that?
Well, I don't know if he's saying he's in support of rape or incest. He's had some very weird views on that in the past. But I can tell you, I don't know about you, and I'm not asking, but I can tell you, I'm not the product of rape and incest. And most people are not the product of rape and incest. And this is just a disrespectful argument. And it's a ludicrous and absurd argument as well. He is anti-choice. He is in favor of mandatory motherhood. He is a person who thinks that a fetus should have more rights and a fertilized egg should have more rights than an adult woman. This is a man who is no longer on any committee in Congress because he said things in the past that even Republicans can't stand, but he's still in Congress. And so he's got a bully pulpit. This is a man should not be an elected official. He is an absolute disgrace. And his words bring shame upon the Republican Party.
So it doesn't sound like you're endorsing his reelection.
Don't think so.
Okay.
No.
Count on that. All right. Our thanks to Gloria. Now let's bring in to join the conversation Antonio Villaraigosa, the former mayor of Los Angeles, and also Michael Knowles, a conservative from The Daily Wire. We began with them talking about the issue of guns. Mayor Villaraigosa, when you were in the state legislature, you authored California's assault weapons ban.
Don Parada, yes, yeah. I authored the assault weapons ban, limiting guns to one a month, the purchase of guns to one a month, safe storage, trigger locks. But we need much more than that, because if you just have it in California, you can go to Arizona, Utah, or Nevada and buy those guns. And so we need a national assault weapons ban. We need to ban bump stocks. We need to address universal background checks, red flag laws. I do believe that Beto was right, that we should be able to buy back those assault weapons to incentivize people. What do you need an assault weapons for? I mean, it's a weapon of war. It's not you don't use it to hunt ducks. And I think gun licensing is important. You know, to drive a car, you need to drive a license. You need to have a license. You should need a license to own a gun, to safely store it, to be able to know how to shoot it and the like. And so I think we need a broad cross-section of gun laws in this country. When you look at the number of people we lose to mass shootings, but just to guns every single day on the streets of our country.
Michael, is there any of that that as a conservative you think you could sign up for?
I must respectfully disagree with every single thing my friend the mayor has just said. We don't need to look just at the California assault weapons ban. We can look because we did have a national assault weapons ban, and by 2005 we had data in that showed that the national assault weapons ban did not accomplish its goal. It did not reduce gun deaths. And the reason for this is because there's no such category as an assault weapon. All weapons are assault weapons. The term was invented in the 1980s. To try to draw a comparison between semi-automatic rifles and fully automatic rifles, which are used in the military. We know that every single year, more people die because of bats, hammers, clubs, fists, and feet than they do because of rifles of any kind, including the dread AR-15. You are 22 times more likely to die from a handgun than you are from any kind of rifle, including the AR-15. So why would we focus only on this one very particular kind of rifle instead of handgun?
But statistically, since the assault weapons ban went away, the number of mass shootings has gone way up.
Well, New York Magazine disputes that. There was a study in 2014 that showed that the lethality and the incidence of those mass shootings has not changed terribly. And of course, in this country, you are much more likely to die from other sorts of gun incidents. And actually, 2/3 of the people who die in gun-related deaths every year die from suicide. I am in no way discounting that there is a serious problem with violence in this country, and specifically when we're talking about that latter category, with mental health. But there is no evidence that has been presented by any party that any of the gun control laws proposed in the last 20 years would have prevented any of these mass shootings.
Gloria?
I'd like to share a wonderful quote from Gloria Steinem. How about if we treat every young man who wants to buy a gun like every woman who wants to get an abortion? Mandatory 48-hour waiting period, parental permission, a note from his doctor proving he understands that what he's about to do, a video he has to watch about the effects of gun violence. Let's close down all but one gun shop in every state and make him travel hundreds of miles, take time off from work, and stay overnight in a strange town to get a gun. Make him walk through a gauntlet of people holding photos of loved ones who were shot to death, people who call him a murderer and beg him not to buy a gun.
I tweeted that last week, by the way.
So you
retweeted
it.
Yeah, it's a great line.
Isn't that great?
So you think that's...
And it's true.
Do you think that's going to happen?
No.
Yeah.
Because controlling a woman's body and her choices is more important to a lot of politicians than controlling guns.
So where do we go from here? I mean, how do we stop these mass shootings? If you don't think it's a gun problem, then what is the problem?
Mental health is a huge problem. Obviously, for the last 50 years, we shut down the mental institutions in this country for very good reason, because there were developments in pharmaceuticals.
Now from the issue of guns to the issue of immigration and the Trump administration making some news this week when it comes to the Statue of Liberty and really the concept of merit-based immigration.
Back with our panel, Gloria Allred, Antonio Villaraigosa, The Daily Wire's Michael Knowles. Michael, does he have a point? Should merit-based immigration be more of a priority for the country?
Of course. Not only does he have a point, I don't even think he's changing the poem. I think he's explaining what it means, because the key there isn't the poor, huddled masses. The key is yearning to breathe free. People who want to come here, who want to stand on their own 2 feet, who want to enjoy this tradition of American liberty. You know, we have the most generous immigration system in the world. We take in over 1 million people a year legally, and then another 1 million illegally probably this year. And there was a poll that came out a year ago that showed the majority of Americans, Democrats and Republicans, want to reduce not only illegal but legal immigration. There are these fears that we are not encouraging assimilation to this country, that we're losing something of our political tradition. Immigration and assimilation are difficult under any circumstances, but when assimilation is not being encouraged, it's virtually impossible. And I think that is a bipartisan anxiety.
Look.
You agreed with everything, I assume.
The fact of the matter is we have 10.5 million people here who are living here, who are working here, who are contributing to this country. The vast majority of people that come here to work. That's a fact. Yes, there are some people that in the course of time, need some governmental assistance. But we know for a fact that today, the undocumented can't receive that assistance. That's one. And legal immigrants also have some limitations. We're focusing on the wrong thing. We need to fix this broken immigration system. We need to provide a pathway to citizenship for these people. Every country has a right to strengthen its borders and to protect its borders. The fact of the matter is, and you talk about this issue of assimilation. You know, German immigrants a century ago assimilated less than Mexican immigrants are today. That's a fact. You know, what we see in our city, in our state, is, the recent immigrants. But most of the people that grow up here speak the language, have assimilated, see themselves as Americans, and don't know any other country. So this notion that we need to address the issue of public charge, that we somehow need to limit immigration. If we want to limit immigration, then we better all have more children. Yeah, because right. The fact is, demographically, yeah. we're getting to the point of Japan and China. We need more people here.
But isn't immigrants here, even if they're not necessarily getting welfare, they're using education in terms of the schools, they're using police forces,
they're
going to the emergency room, they're all things. That's all costing taxpayers, right?
And they're the undocumented is an example, contribute to our Social Security and don't get anything back. The immigrants who are here legally are contributing, they're working, they're paying their taxes, so they're paying for those services. I'm not saying that we can't address immigration differently than we have in the past. You know, we have a right to do that. But we need to remember, bring me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses aspiring for that freedom that we talk about. And do it in a way that reflects our values as Americans and as human beings.
And Gloria, so many different people's families came here as immigrants.
Well, exactly. My grandmother came from, I think, Poland or White Russia. She didn't speak any English. She sold apples on the corner to support her children. My mother came from England, and all of us should think about where we actually came from. And if it had been a merit plan, as suggested by some of the Republicans, many of us would not have been able to be here to enjoy the liberty that we enjoy in the United States. And so we should remember that, of course, we need an immigration policy that makes sense. But we don't have one that makes sense now. But I say stop slamming the poor. Stop slamming with racial slurs often immigrants who come here.
And some stop putting children in cages.
Yeah. And I mean, separating them from their mothers.
It's curious, though, that people exactly weren't right. raising this issue in 2014 when Barack Obama was doing it and when the images that we see today circulating were originated.
Well, there clearly were a lot of people
You may have.
Yeah. I was critical. Look, this isn't a partisan issue. I mean, it's become one, but it shouldn't be. Ronald Reagan was the last person to pass an immigration reform. We should do it, Democrat and Republican working together. I believe that we can put something together.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, they've, racially charged this issue. I mean, because look, when you see as an example, Latinos are only about 60% of the undocumented. But who do you see getting deported? They go into Latino neighborhoods mm-hmm. disproportionately. They're not going after the visa overstayers who came from, Europe. They're going after the people that they believe come from the S countries that President right. Trump has talked about. And that's wrong.
And speaking of this issue of sort of targeting the poor, your good friend Ben Shapiro got into some trouble with some on the left, which happens all the time.
It's a daily occurrence.
But he said this this week about people that are working a second job to pay the rent.
Had to work more than one job to have a roof over your head or food on the table, you probably shouldn't have taken the job that's not paying you enough. That'd be a you problem. In May, 5% of Americans had multiple jobs. 5%. That's really what's bringing down the unemployment rate, is those 5% of workers who have multiple jobs.
That's a you problem? I mean, a lot of people on the left say, I got to do these jobs to pay for my kids, and felt very insulted by that.
Well, I may end this segment with zero jobs because I work for Ben Shapiro, but the point he made there, obviously, this seems to be something of a non-troversy, intentionally ginned up, taken out of context by Media Matters, which every single day tries to get Ben taken off of the air. The point that he made is that 5% of Americans work more than one job. Crucially, this is not always the same 5%. I would ask all of us, how how many of us have worked two jobs at one point in our lives? I certainly have. I suspect many of us still do. And when we're talking about two jobs, are we talking about two 40-hour-a-week jobs? Are we talking about one 40-hour, one 20-hour-a-week job? When was the last time any of us worked less than 60 hours per week? Probably a pretty long time ago.
It's insulting. Come on, let's call it for what it is. When I was in my 20s, I was working as a teacher full-time. I was working at night for several nights a week with the Cerebral Palsy Foundation.
Yeah.
And then I was trying to earn my master's degree at the same time.
And now you're one of the most successful people in the country.
Here's the point. People who work two and sometimes three jobs to support their families and their children, as I was working to support my daughter, should not be castigated because they are doing it. They should be supported. They should be commended for doing it. It's tough.
I don't think they're being castigated.
They could have one job where they'd be earning more. No, I couldn't. That
yes,
was
you,
the
you
best.
You currently
that
have
I,
one job where you're earning more.
I'm talking about then.
Right, because time
and
moves
and
on.
And a lot of people now are working two or three jobs. And you know, you can sit in an ivory tower. You can sit as a radio talk show host.
Or you can
and
work
you can
multiple
try
jobs like Ben Shapiro.
Slam those people who haven't made it the way you have economically. But who does that benefit? Who does that hurt? Stop using them as some sort of political weapon.
I'll just make this last real quickly.
We have an economy that's not working for enough people.
We have record low unemployment.
There are more people working today than there were a few years ago, true. But they're working in jobs where they're barely making ends meet.
Wages are finally rising for the first time in 10 years.
But still, I think the national minimum wage is $7 and change. People need to make more than that. And so I do believe that we need an economy that's working for more people. And I think also when you look at the rhetoric on our politics, both on the right particularly, but even on the left, it has a lot to do with people feel like they're working every day and they're not making it.
Yeah.
And the Republicans who criticize often will be against raising the minimum wage. How hypocritical is that?
I will just point out there are two visions of America being presented. The right vision is saying that people, maybe they have to work two jobs at one point, but over the long scheme, maybe we will be able to achieve the American dream. I know a billionaire who raised 11 kids in a double wide trailer. Now he obviously has $1 billion. And what the left is saying is we will keep you in that static point in your economy, in that entry level job, but we'll give you an extra $1 an hour, vote for us.
I don't know if that's what they're saying.
Sorry.
All right, we're going to have to stop at some point.
And let's wrap things up with our panel by talking about the issue of 2020. Elizabeth Warren statistically tied with Joe Biden in a new poll. Where are we going to now?
Gloria Allred, Antonio Villaraigosa, Michael Knowles, around the horn. Who do you think would be the strongest Democratic nominee?
Well, it appears that Biden would, according to the polls. Warren's coming up fast. Kamala Harris is a force to be reckoned with. Cory Booker is not giving up. So I'd be happy with any of them instead of Trump.
There's a lawyer's answer. All right.
I think it's Kamala Harris, Joe Biden, Elizabeth Warren, and Sanders who have the best shot.
And of those people, who would be the best one?
We'll talk about that.
Okay.
I'm as the Republican on the panel, I'll speak freely. I think Joe Biden is kind of on his way down. He's not really carrying himself very well. Liz Warren and Kamala Harris seem to be the strongest candidates. Liz Warren's weakness is her voice. I don't mean that in a sexist way. The second worst voice in the campaign is Cory Booker. And Kamala Harris's biggest weakness is that she won't embrace her actual autobiography. She won't embrace what she's actually done as a prosecutor. So she's not offering people something to work to vote for. I think either of those candidates, though, if they overcome those flaws, would be very strong.
Of course, all of them want to defeat the president, and we got some new polling about the president and how they would do against him. This was a Fox News poll. It shows that right now, Biden, Sanders, Harris, Warren all beat President Trump in a hypothetical matchup. Of course, the Electoral College is where it's at, not the population as a whole. If that was the case, Hillary Clinton would be the president right now. But where do you see, maybe we'll go reverse, where you see the president standing right now?
I think if the election were held today, I think he would win all 57 states, to quote Barack Obama. But I think a lot of it hinges on the economy. He's got a big vulnerability because he didn't build that big, beautiful wall, and that has really demoralized a lot of his base. If the economy stays strong, I think he'll do very well because the Democratic candidates are relatively quite weak. If the economy falls, he's done.
I'm concerned about this election. I think it's a 50, close to a 50-50 proposition. I think ultimately Democrats win, but we've got to run a campaign that's not just against Trump. We got to say what we're for. I think that's really important. If the economy tanks, as he says, I think it's going to be a landslide. But if it doesn't, it's going to be a close race.
Gloria, last word to you.
As James Carville once said, it's the economy, stupid. And I do think that's a major factor. But as far as Democrats are concerned, I think they will do anything and everything that is legal and sometimes not so peaceful to make sure that Trump is not reelected.
And that's it for the show. Our thanks to Gloria Allred, to Michael Knowles, to Antonio Villaraigosa, and to you for listening. We hope you will subscribe, will rate the shows, leave us comments, send me an email, alexmichelson@gmail.com. Really appreciate you taking the time to listen. And check out some of our one-on-one interviews as well once you subscribe. I'm Alex Michelson. This is The Issue Is.